got picked on at school for things he couldn't change. He tried his best to play it cool, but in the seventh grade, you either fit right in or you don't fit. That's just the cold hard truth. I wish that I'd have been the friend that Billy never knew. I think it's time to come together, you and I can make a change. Maybe we can make a difference, make the world a better place. Look around and love somebody, we've been hateful long enough. Let the good Lord reunite us to this country that we love's undivided.
Welcome back.
You either go to church or you're going to go to hell.
Top of the second hour, today's Road Warrior radio broadcast, this Thursday, November 9th, 2023. And I'm talking about Kurt P. Richter's, I want to say Carl Reiter, you know, the advertising guy. I've talked about him usually when I talk about Vance Packard and the Hidden Persuaders. I think of Carl Reiter and his interesting I can sell you anything type stuff. Anyway, not that guy, Kurt P. Richter. Talking about him, his paper, 1957 paper on the phenomenon of sudden death in animals and man, his reference to Walter Bradford Cannon and his research, you know, the guy responsible for the fight or flight response work. And conversely, homeostasis, interesting guy. In a creepy sort of way. And so, speaking of these kinds of guys, from Wikipedia, it's funny how lots is left out. You know, Johns Hopkins University was basically started by Skull and Bones. I touched on that a little bit recently. From Wikipedia, Kurt Paul Richter graduated from Harvard in 1917 and, after a brief tour in the United States Army, studied under John Brodus Watson, at Johns Hopkins University. And interesting work. Richter induced need states in experimental animals by depriving them of substances essential to survival or manipulating the hormone levels, and showed that these need states generate appetites. Again, you know, this applies to on a much broader scale, you know, the Clord Piven strategy, the Fabian socialists, the conversation that John Taylor Gatto had with Richard Grove, the ultimate history lesson, and Root Hog or Die, you know, the Beatrice Webb, the niece of Herbert Spencer. So, you know, her strategy, kill them with kindness. And I, you know, usually when I think of this, I mention Shakespeare's Taming of the Shrew, kill them with kindness, versus Herbert Spencer's, you know, kill the brutes. And you know, how can we induce certain states in people like rats? And, you know, it makes me think of Pike's letter to Mazzini, creating these vacuums in individuals that we may want to fill. So anyway, Richter's research showed that these need states that he engineered induced need states in experimental animals by depriving them. Showed that these need states generate appetites and behaviors precisely fitting the animal's need, even if the animal had never before experienced the need, demonstrating genetic programming of behavior. And, you know, again, I mean, how many things have we seen recently in the last just decade or so? You know, Google's selfish ledger and their morbid preoccupation with Lamarckian epigenetics and that kind of stuff. So continuing from Wikipedia, Kurt Richter's Wikipedia entry, he also triggered other pre-programmed behaviors such as nest building by manipulating hormone levels. How do you think Edward Bernays would feel about this stuff? Oh my goodness. The depth researchers, they would love that. You tell people, you know, they were the depth researchers and people go, what? What is that? Richter is quoted widely for his drowning rat experiments, and that paper that I'm from which I'm reading is cited there on the phenomenon of sudden death in animals and man, where rats would drown in a fairly short time, but if rats had the experience of rescue one time, then after rescue would swim for many hours when put back in the drowning scenario. This has been interpreted as an argument for the importance of hope and recirculates on the internet regularly. I would say that this is circulated to sort of test and measure the degree of hope left in Americans, and to sort of, you know, the same thing that's happening with the military, with, you know, putting Martin Seligman in charge of comprehensive soldier fitness and mental health, for example, in the Army, which I think is like putting Mengele in charge of soldier fitness. How can we push these people to the breaking point? Some will break, but in plausibly deniable sort of fashion. And along the way, we make them more malleable because we'll save them a little bit here and there in Clord Piven strategy sort of fashion. And the question of who's in charge, who decides, you know, I may say with my mouth, well, Jesus Christ is Lord, and I'm a Christian, like Richard Seed said, but what do my feet say? What do my actions prove? Do they belie a Jungian shadow-esque sort of motivation that escapes my cognitive awareness? Anyway, This is what we're sort of looking at, and so let me continue from the paper in question on the phenomenon of sudden death in animals and man, and then I'll give you my response to the, you know, the people who see the post of reference to Kurt P. Richter's rat study, the swimming rats study, and say, oh yeah, that gives us hope. Give your response to that. All right, continuing with Richter's paper. The significant, so figure two, the caption reads, curve showing average swimming time endpoint drowning of unconditioned tame domesticated Norway rats with relation to water temperature. Averages for seven rats at each point. And you can see from the graph with swimming time in hours up the left and water temperature along the bottom, that around 73 degrees Fahrenheit, they experience significant prolonged survival up to 95 degrees Fahrenheit, and then a decline from there, a sharp decline, obviously because they're being boiled alive. All right, so continuing, the significance of this average curve was greatly reduced by the marked variations in individual swimming times. And you got to remember, you know, the clipping of the whiskers is going to come back here in a minute. At all temperatures, a small number of rats died within 5 to 10 minutes after immersion, while in some instances, others apparently no more healthy swam as long as 81 hours. The elimination of these large variations presented a real problem, which for some time we could not solve. Then the solution came from an unexpected source. There's that again. The finding of the phenomenon of sudden death, which constitutes the main topic of this communication. Okay, so there you go. This is, you know, that's the sort of full disclosure in the paper. The solution came from an unexpected source, the finding of the phenomenon of sudden death, which constitutes the main topic of this communication. On one occasion, while I was watching rats swim, it occurred to me to investigate the effect of trimming the rat's whiskers on its performance in water. Would a rat swimming without whiskers show the peculiar behavior of the original rat in the metabolism cage? Our observations were started with 12 tame domesticated rats. Don't the psychologists tell us that people that abuse animals are usually psychopaths, and they, you know, have more of a propensity to be serial killers and things like that? I digress. Using electric clippers, the whiskers and hair of the facial area were trimmed before the animals were placed in water at 95 degrees Fahrenheit, a temperature at which most intact control rats swim 60 to 80 hours. The first rat swam around excitedly on the surface for a very short time, then dove to the bottom where it began to swim around, nosing its way along the glass wall. Without coming to the surface a single time, it died 2 minutes after entering the tank. Two more of the 12 domesticated rats tested died in much the same way. However, the remaining nine swam 40 to 60 hours. Five of six hybrid rats, crosses between wild and domesticated rats, similarly treated, died in a very brief time. We then tested 34 clipped wild rats, all recently trapped. These animals are characteristically fierce, aggressive, and suspicious, which reminds me of, you know, the wild hogs of the Okefenokee Swamp versus, you know, the Claude Piven strategy. Again, I digress. You know, what happens when you give them free corn? These animals are characteristically fierce, aggressive, and suspicious. They're constantly on the alert for any avenue of escape and react very strongly to any form of restraint in captivity. All 34 died in 1 to 15 minutes after immersion in the jars. So, you know, this is very graphic and horrifying. And again, I know that it's probably difficult for some people to listen to. I'm going to presume that the RBN audience has a stomach for this, and I'm going to continue essentially for effect. I could skip ahead, but, you know, this really, I think, understanding this, reading the paper, and it's not very long, but, you know, it feels long based on the horrific experiments that are being undertaken. I mean, maybe some people will say, well, they're rats, but still, it's psychopathic, I think, to experiment on anything in this sort of fashion. It's still a living creature. So, continuing, from the results, we concluded that trimming the rats, I mean, it sounds cold and psychopathic the way that this, you know, stuff, this subject matter is treated, at least in my humble estimation. So it continues, from the results, we concluded that trimming the rat's whiskers, destroying possibly their most important means of contact with the outside world seemed disturbing enough, especially to wild rats, to cause their deaths. However, when we began analyzing the various steps involved in transferring the fierce wild rats from their cages to the water jars without the use of any anesthetic, it became obvious that a number of other factors had to be taken into account. To evaluate the relative importance of these factors, it became necessary to follow the rats from the time they left their cages until they finally died at the bottom of the swimming jars. Figure 3A shows the type of metal cage used for the wild rats. The beveled end contains a hinged door, the flat end a sliding door. Figure 3B shows the black opaque bag used for catching and holding the rat. The open end is held over the sliding door at the flat end of the cage. When the sliding door is open, the rat sees the dark opening and an avenue of escape, and usually within seconds, almost shoots in. The instant the rat is out of the cage, its retreat is cut off by a rod pressed down across the mouth of the bag, as shown in Figure 3C. Figures 3D and E show how, by means of the rod, the rat is then pushed into the end of the bag, where it is firmly but gently prevented from turning. Well, isn't that nice? Firmly but gently. The head is located by palpation and is held between the thumb and fingers with care not to exert any pressure on the neck, while the body is held in the palm of the hand. Over 2,000 rats have been held in this way, and none have ever made an attempt to bite through the bag. The rat is then lifted, and the black cloth is peeled back, exposing its head and body. See Figure 3F. Held in this way, the rat can neither bite nor escape. Its whiskers can be trimmed, it can be injected, or it can be dropped directly into a swimming jar. Thus, in evaluating the possible causes of the prompt death of the wild rats in this experiment, account must be taken of the following factors. And these are the 10 factors that are listed. 1. Reaction of the rat to confinement in the holding bag. 2. Reaction to being held in the experimenter's hand while being prevented from biting or escaping. 3. Peripheral and cerebral vascular reactions to being held in an upright position. Parenthetically, the upright posture is reported to be fatal to wild rabbits. 4. Peripheral and cerebral vascular reactions to possible unavoidable pressure on the carotid sinus, carotid body, or larynx exerted by the tips of the forefinger and thumb in holding the rat. Prolonged pressure on the carotid sinus can produce syncope and even death in man as well as animals through its effect on vascular and respiratory mechanisms. Parenthetically, that's added. 5. Reaction to the process of being clipped. 6. Reaction to confinement in swimming jar with no avenue of escape. 7. Reaction of the clipped rats to a new situation determined by the loss of stimulation from whiskers. 8. Respiratory reaction to immersion in water. Parenthetically, diving produces marked slowing in heart rate. 9. Peripheral and cerebral vascular reactions to immersion in water at temperature of 95 degrees Fahrenheit. Parenthetically, immersion in water of this temperature could produce a marked drop in pressure, resulting in cerebral anemia. And 10. Vascular reaction to nearly upright swimming posture. Parenthetically, similar to, but presumably more marked than in number 3. At present, it appears that of all these factors, 2 are the most important. The restraint involved in holding the wild rats, thus suddenly and finally abolishing all hope of escape, and the confinement in the glass jar, further eliminating all chance of escape, and at the same time threatening them with immediate drowning. Isn't that fun? Stick around, we'll be right back after this short break.
Hi, Tom Bolton for Ease Off. I know so many of you are finding our Easy 4 carcass drop and lift an essential tool for your meat processing operation. But today I want to spotlight four of our new products. First, our right height hog cradles with steel or aluminum frames. Our customers love this back-saving innovation that enhances sanitation and speeds production. Next, our beef cradles with stainless steel or aluminum frames eliminate rust and corrosion. We hope you'll compare our quality and prices for this essential part of your processing line. Our cradles are especially effective when used with our power skinner. And finally, our hook tumbler will keep your hooks clean and polished. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too.
EaseOff, LLC, 417-932-6419.
Do you truly want to stay out of the system? Are you prepared to buy into the biggest scam since the Iraqi dinar? If not, then put your money where it belongs, in your possession, not in the hands of an international MLM cartel. At Kettle Moraine Limited, we will provide you with the finest Swiss-minted detachable gram sheets of pure 24-karat gold for hundreds of dollars less than the so-called privately issued credit cards with elusive gold backing. Gold backing? The only gold that I want is in my back pocket, not backed by promises of an operation even the U.S. Chamber of Commerce is suspect of, giving a rating of C-. To get the full story, visit Sierra Madre Precious Metals.com and go to the Valcombe Bullion Vault. Once you have read the whole story about the scam being perpetrated on an unsuspecting public and how you can avoid being a victim by purchasing these beautiful, barterable, tradable sheets of gold at tremendous savings and in the strictest of privacy, be prepared to take the steps to protect your wealth with the purchase of the real deal. Detachable 50-gram gold bars from Kettle Moraine Limited by calling 602-799-8214. Ask about our 1-ounce Valcombe detachable bars, which break into 1/10-ounce bars. And don't forget, for all of your precious metal needs, whether buying or having the need to sell, call Kettle Moraine Limited. Remember, no dinar, no celery, and no carrots. If you buy from someone else, tell them you want AU, not BS. Call Kettle Moraine LTD today at 602-799-8214. Kettle Moraine LTD, 602-799-8214.
For some reason, I feel like we should be playing Smashing Pumpkins right now. You know, Bullet with Butterfly Wings. Despite all my rage, I'm still just a rat in the cage. Continuing. This is awful stuff. Really awful. But the overlords of society have employed the Kurt Richter's, the Walter Cannons, the John B. Watsons, the Gustav Le Bons, Wilfred Trotters, Carl Jung's, Sigmund Freud's, Edward Bernays, in order to manipulate and control people in ways that people do not comprehend. Make us do things that, you know, and make us think and believe that these things are our ideas. So, you know, speaking of Richter, I read from his Wikipedia entry earlier, and even Wikipedia says he studied under John B. Watson at Johns Hopkins University. And if you don't know, look up the Little Albert experiment. I've talked about that in the past. It is horrifying. Horrifying. And so from the experiment, there is a, if you go to the Wikipedia page, even for the Little Albert experiment, there's an image with a caption, one of a series of published stills taken from film of the experiment. And the caption of the image says, now he even fears Santa Claus. Well, he should have feared Santa Claus in the first place, but, you know, Santa Claus is usually, you know, Saint Nimrod is presented as a good guy, even though, what is that series of, that franchise, I can't think of it. That's the more honest depiction of what we should think of. Anyway, from the Wikipedia entry, it says, Watson followed the procedures which Ivan Pavlov had used in his experiments with dogs. And it's interesting, you know, people, I think it was probably Alexandra who did a video not too long ago talking about this kind of stuff. And she said, you know, Pavlov, notice I said Pavlov and not his dog. And that reminds me of the speaking of all this meta type stuff, the social media meme that says, you know, something like, I was thinking my dog is so easily entertained sitting there chasing his tail. And then I realized that I was watching the dog chasing his tail. So, anyway, back to this excerpt. I will give you a little bit more from this and then my thoughts. But the basically, we're getting to the findings that have given rise to what, you know, the reasons why people call this the hope experiment or whatever, you know, euphemism is used in that regard. So continuing from Richter's paper, some of the wild rats died simply while being held in the hand. Some even died when put in the water directly from their living cages without ever being held. The combination of both maneuvers, killed a far higher percentage. When, in addition, the whiskers were trimmed, all normal wild rats tested so far have died. The trimming of the whiskers thus proved to play a contributory rather than an essential role. What killed these rats? Why do all of the fierce, aggressive wild rats die promptly on immersion after clipping, and only a small number of the similarly treated, tame, domesticated rats? On the basis of Cannon's conclusions, and under the influence of the current thinking about the importance of the part played by the adrenals and the sympathetic nervous system in emotional states, and especially under stress, we naturally looked first for signs of sympathetic stimulation, especially for tachycardia and death in systole. Accordingly, we were first interested in measuring the heart rate. Stick around. We'll be right back after this short break.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
What if Extendivite really works, but you find that hard to believe and you spend precious time looking for someone to say, just try it? I have my help today because of Extendivite, and if I did not take a leap of faith and try it, well, I would be on disability today. Take one bottle of Extendivite as suggested for 60 days to find out for yourself. No need to stop any other meds you may be on. You know by now that they are not working for you. Before the 60 days are up, I know that you will feel Extendivite working for you and will want to take another bottle. Life is too short. Get your Extendivite today. Extendivite is available in capsule or liquid form for just $69.95 for a 2-month supply. To get started, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Are you one of the millions of people who feel like there is a dark cloud hanging over their heads whenever they're using pharmaceutical drugs? For some, the short-term relief can turn into an opioid addiction nightmare. Have you ever wondered why CBD oil is a billion-dollar industry? It's because it works better than opioids and is actually healthy for you. However, CBD oil is stripped of all other helpful compounds found in the hemp plant. According to neuroscientists, the whole hemp plant, otherwise known as hemp paste, is even more effective than the chemically processed CBD oil. Are you ready to take back your health? You can try hemp paste for the price of a cup of coffee.
Hemppaste.com/RBN. Free shipping on orders over $50. See the banners for Hemp Paste at republicbroadcasting.org and visit hemppaste.com/RBN.
Hello, hello, hello from beautiful Colorado. My name is Samuel Jung Kay, and I am currently the lead Shilajit hunter and master herbalist for Colorado Shilajit Company. In this video series, I will be discussing what we believe is the greatest of all adaptogenic superfoods and the single greatest natural healing remedy gifted to us by Mother Earth. I think you too will become as excited by this incredible substance called Shilajit as we were and are after our discovery of this amazing gift right here in beautiful, colorful Colorado. You may already know Shilajit by other names. Shilajit, Momio, Momi, Mami, Mineral Pitch, Asphaltum, and others. Shilajit literally translates to destroyer of weakness and conqueror of mountains. Shilajit has been in use for thousands of years and is considered as the highest valued cure-all of any earthly substance.
Look for the gold mountain and medical symbol logo in banners on republicbroadcasting.org to watch the full video and see more information. Use code GORBN when ordering. That's G-O-R-B-N.
The world is a vampire sent to drain. Secret destroyers hold you up to the flames. And why do I get for my pain? Betrayed desires and I
welcome back. Bottom of the second hour of today's Road Warrior Radio broadcast, this Thursday, November 9th, 2023. You know, and Veterans Day is around the corner. The military is, G.I. Joe is the sort of cliche experimental unit for this kind of stuff. So again, you know, Martin Seligman on the periphery, the guy who, if you read Jane Mayer's book, you know the official narrative was that Seligman was brought in via the CIA proxy of Mitchell Jessen and Associates in Spokane, Washington. So he's brought in, and you know what goes on at Fairchild Air Force Base is interesting in this regard. Anyway, Seligman is brought in through these guys, CIA proxy, you know, ostensibly to train SOF, Special Operations Forces, in SEER tactics. But it turns out that it was more about offense than defense, if you know what I mean, which is where we get those pictures, you know, the Abu Ghraib pictures. And by the way, what kind of a Bernaysian moment was that? You know, guy with outstretched arms, hooded figure on a crate or whatever with electrodes on his fingers. Those images that we got. Anyway, again, I digress. Back to Kurt P. Richter's. And so, you know, who's the rat in the cage there? Ironic. Who's being tested and measured? Everyone, perhaps? Kurt P. Richter's paper on the phenomenon of sudden death in animals and man. So continuing where I left off, they test, you know, they start looking at heart rate, and that's horrifying. Point of copper wires were dipped into electrode jelly and inserted under the skin of the two hind legs and one foreleg of the rats. They were inserted up the legs, and connecting wires were bent back over the legs. A piece of plastic adhesive tape wrapped around the leg held the electrode wire in place, ensuring a force exerted on the connecting wire would pull the electrode further under the skin rather than dislodge it. The connecting wires were brought together over the animal's back. In this way, the rat could swim without getting itself tangled. Surprisingly, records taken underwater were indistinguishable from those taken in air. This is all psychopathic, in my humble estimation. Contrary to our expectation, the EKG records indicated that the rats succumbing promptly died with a slowing of the heart, slowing of the heart rate, rather than with an acceleration. So skipping ahead, the stimulation of these rats scarcely seems one demanding fight or flight. It is rather one of hopelessness. Whether they are restrained in the hand or confined in the swimming jar, the rats in a situation against which they have no defense. This reaction of hopelessness is shown by some wild rats very soon after being grasped in the hand and prevented from moving. They seem literally to give up, quote unquote. Support for the assumption that the sudden death phenomenon depends largely on emotional reactions to restraint or immersion comes from the observation that after elimination of the hopelessness, the rats do not die. This is achieved by, and so, you know, again, parenthetically, I will just say society is changing, let's just say, in esoteric, you know, Lucius Trust, work of the hierarchy sort of fashion. So you need to move society along a continuum of, you know, horrific scope and, you know, normalize terror and all kinds of things, you know, to sort of make Halloween a daily occurrence. And so how do you normalize that without killing everybody in the process? This gives some insight, I think. Anyway, the observation that after elimination of the hopelessness, the rats do not die. This is achieved by repeatedly holding the rats briefly and then freeing them, and by immersing them in water for a few minutes on several occasions. In this way, the rats quickly learn that the situation is not actually hopeless. Thereafter, they again become aggressive, try to escape, and show no signs of giving up. Wild rats, so conditioned, swim just as long as domestic rats or longer. Another observation worthy of record concerns the remarkable speed of recovery of which these animals are capable. Once freed from restraint in the hand or confinement in the glass jars, a rat that quite surely would have died in another minute or two becomes normally active and aggressive in only a few minutes. Thus, in order to measure the maximum swimming time, we now try to free the rats of all emotional reactions to restraint or confinement by successively exposing them to these situations and freeing them several times beforehand. In this way, we have succeeded in eliminating most of the individual variations and are now obtaining quite constant reproducible endurance records for both domesticated and wild rats. And so, you know, it doesn't sound quite as romantic as it is depicted floating around on social media. I think when you hear it that way. And, well, maybe just a couple of extra bits. Like the wild rat, primitive man, when freed from voodoo, is said to recover almost instantaneously, even though he had recently seemed more dead than alive. These observations suggest that the sudden death phenomenon may be a one-time occurrence both in rats and man in any particular circumstances, ending either in death or in immunity from this particular kind of death. And again, I think COVID, I think of, you know, the stuff that's going on you know, with the Christian Taliban. the New Apostolic Reformation stuff and, you know, charismatic stuff that seems to be trending toward the revived Knights Templar and, you know, Crusades type stuff. Anyway, in human beings as well as in rats, we see the possibility that hopelessness and death may result from the effects of a combination of reactions, all of which may operate in the same direction and increase the vagal tone. There's further suggestion that the incidence of this response varies inversely as the degree of civilization or domestication of the individual, since it occurs more frequently in wild than in domesticated rats, and so far certainly has been described chiefly in primitive man, that is to say in creatures living in precarious situations. So could this kind of stuff be used to measure people through social media these days? You know, how domesticated are you? And how dumbed down are you? Test and measure the cyberneticians would love that. That's probably it. Lastly, I'll give you the summary of the paper. A phenomenon of sudden death has been described that occurs in man, rats, and many other animals, apparently as a result of hopelessness. And again, you know, it's interesting that this is not an isolated study. Obviously, Walter Bradford Cannon's work is in view. John B. Watson's work is in view. And it was just a little while forward from here, about a decade from this paper, that Martin Seligman's work comes on the scene and is in view. And there are others, obviously. So continuing, this seems to involve overactivity primarily of the parasympathetic system. In this instance, as in many others, the ideas of Walter Cannon opened up a new area of interesting, exciting research. Only psychopaths would talk in that language. I was going to offer my response. I'll save that for tomorrow. And we'll go to the phones instead. And we have calls stacking up so quickly. James in Vancouver, thanks for calling. Welcome.
Yes. Well, you described the experiment with the rats just now. Yeah. And that's what they did with shots for humanity. Same kind of thinking. We'll put a bunch of stuff in there and, you know, see what happens and inject them all with it. Record the results. Back to you.
Exactly. Yeah.
Test and measure. My point is this is useless These are useless biological experiments, and they've been done over and over again because the powers that be don't want any original research as to do with life extension, which has existed since the 1930s, at least, or maybe before in Germany, mm-hmm. where they perfected ways to extend life. And then, of course, Germany lost the war, and all of those things were taken out of Germany, and they're still secret today. Back to you.
It's interesting, the stuff that we know about that has been suppressed and continues to be intentionally occluded from history in that regard. Stuff that's 100 years old, you know.
Yeah. But if you ask the physicians from NASA if you can do that, you could sit down with them in a secure room where they're not afraid to be fired or whatever, you'd see that medicine is way more than what what these people are trying to let out. That there's many more things that are hiding on the shelves that are not released to the public. So. Mm-hmm. I'll let you get on with the other callers.
All right. Thank you.
Thank
Much
you,
appreciated,
Bono.
James.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting how many times we've heard, and this research might, break new ground on cancer and AIDS. What was I just reading? That was Richard Seed stuff. You know, they were talking about that there's the was it Wired Magazine article? Yeah, Go Forth and Multiply, 1998 Wired Magazine article talked about that stuff, you know? Breakthrough research, if it worked, you could work on techniques for any cancer you could name, and of course AIDS. But you know what, funny how we haven't been able to fix that yet. No vaccine for AIDS yet, but there is a vaccine for COVID, but there are boosters. So anyway, back to the phones. Tom in Utah, thanks for calling. Welcome.
Chris, I think I referred to Isaiah chapter 66, verse 4. He's talking about delusions and fear. Also, this auto-affected hopelessness. So what's the remedy? How do we immunize ourselves against delusions and fears?
Well, I wouldn't use the term immunize, but... we can protect ourselves by putting our faith and trust in and our hope in Jesus Christ alone and above all. The first commandment is, thou shalt have no other gods before me.
See, I think you refer to a scripture as the magic decoder ring.
The Holy Spirit, 1 Corinthians chapter 2, the Holy
right.
Spirit, without which... the natural man does not understand the things of God.
Well, see, I kind of consider Isaiah 66, 4, 3 and 4, that chapter is the magic decoder ring biologically. And if we want to have a functioning brain to deal with the delusions, we also got to take care of it in accordance to Isaiah's recommendations. So when you get a chance... Go through that chapter 66 and do a commentary on it. Let's see how we can apply it.
I will give that some thought.
Don't think about it. Do it. Anyway. All right. Good enough.
Thanks, Tom. Much appreciated, as always. All right. In the interest of time, back to the phones. Larkin, Texas. Thanks for calling. Welcome.
Howdy, Chris.
Morning, sir.
Yeah, I would direct listeners to remembering this thing called cybernetics.
Yeah.
It's been with us for some time. And remember, too, that our very participation, not just with social media, but connecting to the internet at all in this world today is basically volunteering to enter yourself into basically you're enrolling yourself into becoming a lab rat. Because you can do some searches online. You know, for example, so going back to the cybernetics, here's the title of Wiener's books. Remember, 48 was the cybernetics or control and communication in the animal and the machine. You know, in the 1950s, 54, the human use of human beings.
Yeah.
And then we look at, you know, like my old chum from high school, you know, the retired emeritus professor, psycho-cybernetics.
Yeah, Maxwell Maltz.
How about psychometrics? I mean, it's a thing. These experiments continue apace today. They're in full flower, full bloom.
Yep.
And the fact of the matter is now we can look at things like social impact bonds and social impact investing. We can look at things like, for instance, how about transportation as a service? It's a thing.
So,
look it up.
So when I think of social impact, I think of the Orwellian boot on the face.
Well, that's what it is, because social social engineering as a service. Okay, and so long as we are connected to this technology, we're going to be turned into obedient slaves, techno slaves, and we're going to be communitarian techno slaves. That's
so. Speaking of experimental units, can we play the Obama clip real quick, Mr. Bordop?
And yet, despite the fact that we've now essentially clinically tested the vaccine on billions of people worldwide.
There it is. Right there.
Yeah, let's remember these psychopaths, they think in terms of the human herd, not individuals. Just look up what is epidemiology and read what it says at the CDC.gov website. You know, their patient is the community. It's not the individual, because the individual does not count.
So I remember, and, you know, I think this is maybe helpful for, you know, just a sort of reminder for some people. Some of us will not need a reminder, but I remember Alan Watt talking about some people who, you know, I don't know, at least one or more of whom he had personally met, and they're very charming, they're very charismatic, and, you know, you would meet them at a dinner party and think, oh, that's a very nice person, but, you know, privately, if you see them in a different capacity, it's terrifying because they're clearly psychopathic and they would have no qualms about killing you personally, or, you know, probably not getting their hands dirty and doing messy things, but having someone do it and do it for, you know, your life is worth probably three figures at most. You know, I can pay someone to get rid of you and it won't cost me hardly anything. And Patrick Bet-David was on Chris Williamson's podcast recently. There's a clip from that titled Patrick Bet-David Reveals Who Runs the World. It's a 10-minute clip. The whole interview is about 2.5 hours long. The point is, I think that's the clip or the segment in the interview where they're talking about the same kind of people, and these people that they refer to as apex predators who have no qualms about. You know, Patrick Bet-David goes through this idea of people who achieve a certain level of unparalleled success, so to speak, in life. And, you know, they think of other people in the terms that you just mentioned, that they are not people like this person. They're like vampires, basically. If people have seen the vampire movies where vampires walk among the people and they're like, they're just sheep. These people are sheep. They don't have any concept that this person who considers himself an apex predator is walking among them.
Yeah, we could also revisit the work of Earl Shoris, the Nation of Salesmen. You know, we are actually bred to be the consummate salesman.
Yeah,
in every walk, every avenue of life, every occupation, every field of human endeavor.
Yeah,
I'll leave you with this. There's a reel that I discovered at the top of my Facebook page. That'd be really cool if you could play that and comment on it. Even if it's just privately, it's only about 2 minutes, but talks about what happens to five-year-olds when they're tested. They're given a creativity test, and 98% are at the genius level. According to the definition, you have a problem, and you seek solutions to the problem. So they're problem solvers.
Mm-hmm.
But at 10 years old, it's reduced down to like 30%. Are at genius level.
Mm-hmm.
Then at 15 years old, it's down to like 12%. And then you test the adult population, it's down to 2%
mm-hmm.
genius level. And this is all attributable to schooling. And what happens to an average human being going through the education system, especially if it's compulsory as it is in this country? And that's quite telling, I think. And mm-hmm. so I'd be really curious as to your response.
Mm. Yeah, definitely.
And especially what they come up with is the reasoning. The reasoning is because of schooling, because uncritical thinking and behavior is learned.
And, you know,
a la learned helplessness.
Yeah,
see what I'm
absolutely.
Saying? The correlation.
And it is, you know, what Bertrand Russell wrote about in The Impact of Science on Society, the idea, you know, that it would cost how much it would cost per head to make children believe that snow is black versus, you know, how much it would cost to make them believe it's dark gray. So, in other words, yeah. you know, how can we induce this state in a plausibly deniable sort of fashion over the course of time and just, you know, have the frog be boiled over a lifetime and be none the wiser?
Yeah, we're literally being bred to be slaves, and
yep.
that's a fact. And
domesticated herd.
Go to the American Society of Cybernetics and look at the timeline sometime. Thanks, Chris.
Amen. Thank you, Lark. Much appreciated, as always. That'll do it for today's broadcast. Please pray for one another. Please support the network. I hope it was informative. As always, it truly is an honor and a pleasure. Take care. God bless. We'll catch you on the other side.
Every second what he swore, yes, he was the son of a whore, always wanted by the law. Wouldn't you like to know? Wouldn't you like to know? Deeper. Right, King Rab was a dirty old man, and a dirty old man was he. Now what did I tell you? Would you like this?
The secret to aging like fine wine is in the vines. Ciroc grape seeds and skins contain high levels of flavonoids and resveratrol. Fermentation breaks these organic compounds down into smaller molecules, penetrating these therapeutic ingredients deeper into the skin, delivering faster and more effective results. Our handmade fermented skincare products are formulated with all natural ingredients and do not contain any phthalates or parabens. Similar products can cost as much as $180. At Natural Earth Medicine, we source our ingredients from local Arizona vineyards and cold process our oils to ensure that our customers receive the highest quality product in its purest form. Learn more at our website and try our fermented skincare products today. Visit naturalearthmedicine.com. That's naturalearthmedicine.com.
You can't! can't handle the truth.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit republicbroadcasting.org today, because you can handle the truth.